Carlos Castaneda's The Second Ring of Power, Chapter 3, La Gorda, Part 2. "I think it's time to go to our appointment," she said out of breath. My flying opened us both. You felt my flying in your belly. That means you are open and ready to meet the four forces." "What four forces are you talking about?" "The Nawal and Gennaro's allies. You've seen them. They are horrendous. Now they are free from the Nawal and Gennaro's gourds. You heard one of them around Soledad's house the other night. They are waiting for you. The moment the darkness of the day sets in, they'll be uncontainable. One of them even came after you in the daytime at Soledad's place. Those allies now belong to you and me. We will take two each. I don't know which ones. I don't know how either. All the Nawal told me was that you and I would have to tackle them by ourselves." "Wait, wait," I shouted. She did not let me speak. She gently put her hand over my mouth. I felt a pang of terror in the pit of my stomach. I had been confronted in the past with some inexplicable phenomena which Don Juan and Don Gennaro had called their allies. There were four of them. They were entities as real as anything in the world. Their presence was so outlandish that it would create an unparalleled state of fear in me every time I perceived them. The first one I had encountered was Don Juan's. It was a dark rectangular mass, 8 or 9 feet high and 4 or 5 feet across. It moved with the crushing weight of a giant boulder and breathed so heavily that it reminded me of the sound of bellows. I had always encountered it at night, in the darkness. I had fancied it to be like a door that walked by pivoting on one corner and then on the other. The second ally I came across was Don Gennaro's. It was a long-faced, bald-headed, extraordinarily tall, glowing man with thick lips and an enormous droopy eyes. He always wore pants that were too short for his long, skinny legs. I had seen those two allies a great many times while in the company of Don Juan and Don Gennaro. The sight of them would invariably cause an irreconcilable separation between my reason and my perception. On the one hand, I had no rational grounds whatsoever to believe that what was happening to me was actually taking place. And on the other hand, there was no possible way of discarding the truthfulness of my perception. Since they had always appeared while Don Juan and Don Gennaro were around, I had filed them away as products of the powerful influence that those two men had had on my suggestible personality. In my understanding, it was either that or that Don Juan and Don Gennaro had in their possession forces they called their allies, forces which were capable of manifesting themselves to me as those horrendous entities. A feature of the allies was that they were never allowed me to scrutinize them thoroughly. I had tried various times to focus my undivided attention on them, but every time I would get dizzy and disassociated. The other two allies were more elusive. I had seen them only once, a gigantic black jaguar with yellow glowing eyes and a ravenous enormous coyote. The two beasts were ultimately aggressive and overpowering. The jaguar was Don Gennaro's, and the coyote was Don Juan's. Lagorda crawled out of the cave. I followed her. She led the way. We walked out of the gully, We walked out of the gully, reached a long, rocky plain. She stopped and let me step ahead. I told her that if she was going to let me lead us, I was going to try to get to the car. She shook her head affirmatively and clung to me. I could feel her clammy skin. She seemed to be in a state of great agitation. It was perhaps a mile to where we had left the car, and to reach it we had to cross the deserted rocky plain. Don Juan had shown me a hidden trail among some big boulders, almost on the side of the mountain that flanked the plain toward the east. I headed for that trail. Some unknown urge was guiding me, otherwise I would have taken the same trail we had taken before when we had crossed the plain on the level ground. Lagorda seemed to be anticipating something awesome. She grabbed onto me, her eyes were wild. Are we going the right way? I asked. She did not answer. She pulled her shawl and twisted it until it looked like a long, thick rope. She encircled my waist with it, crossed over the ends, and encircled herself. She tied a knot and thus had us bound together in a band that looked like a figure eight. What did you do this for? I asked. She shook her head. Her teeth chattered, but she could not say a word. Her fright seemed to be extreme. She pushed me to keep on walking. I could not help wondering why I was not scared out of my wits myself. As we reached the high trail, the physical exertion began to take its toll on me. I was wheezing and had to breathe through my mouth. I could see the shape of the big boulders. There was no moon, but the sky was so clear that there was enough light to distinguish shapes. I could hear Lagorda also wheezing. I tried to stop to catch my breath, but she pushed me gently as she shook her head negatively. I wanted to make a joke to break the tension. Then I heard a strange thumping noise. My head moved involuntarily to my right to allow my left ear to scan the area. I stopped breathing for an instant, and then I clearly heard that someone else besides Lagorda and myself was breathing heavily. I checked again to make sure before I told her. There was no doubt that the massive shape was there among the boulders. I put my hand on Lagorda's mouth as we kept on moving and signaled her to hold her breath. I could tell that the massive shape was very close. It seemed to be sliding as quietly as it could. It was wheezing softly. Lagorda was startled. She squatted and pulled me down with her by her shawl tied around my waist. She put her hands under her skirt for a moment and then stood up. Her hands were clasped, and when she snapped her fingers open, a volley of sparks flew from them. "Piss in your hands," Lagorda whispered through her clenched teeth. "Huh?" I said, unable to comprehend what she wanted me to do. She whispered her order three or four more times with increasing urgency. She must have realized that I did not know what she wanted, for she squatted again and showed me she was urinating in her hands. I stared at her dumbfounded as she made her urine fly like reddish sparks. My mind went blank. I didn't know which was more absorbing, the sight of Lagorda was creating with her urine or the wheezing of the approaching entity. I could not decide on which of the two stimuli to focus my attention. Both were enthralling. "Quickly, do it in your hands," Lagorda grumbled between her teeth. I heard her, but my attention was dislocated. With an imploring voice, Lagorda added that my sparks would make the approaching creature, whatever it was, retreat. She began to whine, and I began to feel desperate. I could not hear, but I could sense with my whole body the approaching entity. I tried to urinate in my hands. My effort was useless. I was too self-conscious and nervous. I became possessed by Lagorda's agitation and struggled desperately to urinate. I finally did. I snapped my fingers three or four times, but nothing flew out of them. "Do it again," Lagorda said. "It takes a while to make sparks." I told her that I had used up all the urine I had. There was the most intense look of despair in her eyes. At that instant, I saw the massive rectangular shape moving toward us. Somehow it did not seem menacing to me, although Lagorda was about to faint out of fear. Suddenly she untied her shawl and leaped onto the small rock that was behind me and hugged me from behind, putting her chin on my head. She had practically climbed on my shoulders. The instant that we adopted that position, the shape ceased moving. It kept on wheezing, perhaps 20 feet away from us. I felt a giant tension that seemed to be focused in my midsection. After a while, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that if we remained in that position, we would have drained our energy and fallen prey to whatever was stalking us. I told her that we were going to have to run for our lives. She shook her head negatively. She seemed to have regained her strength and confidence. She said then that we had to bury our heads in our arms and lie down with our thighs against our stomachs. I remembered that years before, Don Juan had made me do the same thing one night when I was caught in a deserted field in northern Mexico by something equally unknown and yet equally real to my senses. At that time, Don Juan had said that Fleeing was useless, and the only thing that we could do was to remain on the spot in the position of Lagorda had just prescribed. I was about to kneel down when I had the unexpected feeling that we had made a terrible mistake in leaving the cave. We had to go back to it at any cost. I looped Lagorda's shawl over my shoulders and under my arms. I asked her to hold the tips above my head, climb to my shoulders and stand on them, bracing herself by pulling up the ends of the shawl and fastening it like a harness. Years before, Don Juan had told me that one should meet strange events, such as the rectangular shape in front of us, with unexpected actions. He said that once he himself stumbled upon a deer that talked to him, and he stood on his head for the duration of that event as a means of assuring his survival and to ease the strain of such an encounter. My idea was to try to walk around the rectangular shape back to the cave with Lagorda standing on my shoulders. She whispered that the cave was out of the question. The narwhal had told her not to remain there at all. I argued as I fixed the shawl for her that my body had the certainty that in the cave we would be all right. She replied that that was true and it would work except that we had no means whatever to control those forces. We needed a special container, a gourd of some sort, like those I had seen dangling from Don Juan and Don Gennaro's belts. She took off her shoes and climbed on my shoulders and stood there. I held her by her calves. She was pulling on the ends of the shawl. I felt the tension of the band under my armpit. I waited until she had regained her balance. To walk in the darkness carrying 115 pounds on my shoulders was no mean feat. I went very slowly. I counted 23 paces. I had to put her down. The pain on my shoulder blades was unbearable. I told her that although she was very slender, her weight was crushing my collarbone. The interesting part, however, was the rectangular shape was no longer in sight. Our strategy had worked. Lagorda suggested that she carry me on her shoulders for a stretch. I found the idea ludicrous. My weight was more than what her small frame could stand. We decided to walk for a while and see what happened. There was a dead silence around us. We walked slowly, bracing each other. We had moved no more than a few yards when I again began to hear strange breathing noises. A soft, prolonged hiss, like the hissing of a feline. I hurriedly helped her to get back on my shoulders and walked another 10 paces. I knew we had to maintain the unexpected as a tactic if we wanted to get out of that place. I was trying to figure out another set of unexpected actions we could use instead of Lagorda standing on my shoulders when she took off her long dress. In one single movement, she was naked. She scrambled on the ground looking for something. I heard a cracking sound, and she stood up holding a branch from a low bush. She maneuvered her shawl around my shoulders and neck and made a sort of riding support where she could sit with her legs wrapped around my waist, like a child riding piggyback. She then put the branch inside her dress and held it above her head. She began to twirl the branch, giving the dress a strange bounce. To that effect, she added a whistle, imitating the particular cry of a night owl. The peculiar cry of an owl. After 100 yards or so, I heard the same sounds coming from behind us and from the sides. She changed to another bird call, a piercing sound similar to that made of a peacock. A few minutes later, the same bird calls were echoing all around us. I had witnessed a similar phenomenon of bird calls being answered years before with Don Juan. I thought at the time that perhaps the sounds were being produced by Don Juan, who was hiding nearby in the darkness, or even by someone closely associated with him, such as Don Gennaro, who was aiding him in creating an insurmountable fear in me, a fear that made me run in total darkness without even stumbling. Don Juan had called that particular action of running in the darkness the Gate of Power. I asked Lagorda if she knew how to do the Gate of Power. She said yes. I told her that we were going to try it, even though I was not at all sure I could do it. She said that it was neither the time nor the place for that, and pointed in front of us. My heart, which had been beating fast all along, began to pound wildly inside my chest. Right in front of us, perhaps 10 feet away, and smack in the middle of the trail, was one of Don Gennaro's allies, the strange glowing man with the long face and the bald head. I froze on the spot. I heard Lagorda shriek as though it were coming from far away. She frantically pounded on my sides with a fist. Her action broke my fixation on the man. She turned my head to the left and then to the right. On my left side, almost touching my leg, was the black mass of a giant feline with glaring yellow eyes. To my right, I saw an enormous phosphorescent coyote. Behind us, almost touching Lagorda's back, was the dark rectangular shape. The man turned his back to us and began to move on the trail. I also began to walk. Lagorda kept on shrieking and whining. The rectangular shape was almost grabbing her back. I heard it moving with crushing thumps. The sound of its steps reverberated on the hills around us. I could feel its cold breath on my neck. I knew that Lagorda was about to go mad, and so was I. The feline and the coyote were almost rubbing my legs. I could hear their hissing and growling increasing in volume. I had at that moment the irrational urge to make a certain sound Don Juan had taught me. The allies answered me. I kept on frantically making the sound, and they answered me back. The tension diminished by degrees. Before we reached the road, I was part of a most extravagant scene. Lagorda was riding piggyback, happily bouncing her dress over her head as if nothing had ever happened, keeping the bounces in rhythm with the sound I was making, while the four creatures of another world answered me back as they moved at my pace, flanking us on all four sides. We got to the road in that fashion, but I did not want to leave. There seemed to be something missing. I stayed motionless with Lagorda on my back and made a very special tapping sound Don Juan had taught me. He had said that it was the call of the moths. In order to produce it, one had to use the inside edge of the left hand and the lips. As soon as I made it, everything seemed to come to rest peacefully. The four entities answered me, and as they did, I knew which were the ones that would go with me. I then walked to the car and eased Lagorda off my back onto the driver's seat and pushed her over the side. We drove away in absolute silence. Something had touched me somewhere, and my thoughts had been turned off. Lagorda suggested that we go to Don Gennaro's place instead of driving to her house. She said that Benigno, Nesta, and Pablito lived there and that they were out of town. Her suggestion appealed to me. Once we were in the house, Lagorda lit a lamp, and the place looked just as it had the last time I had visited Don Gennaro. We sat on the floor. I pulled up a bench and put my writing pad on it. I was not tired and wanted to write, but I could not do it. I could not write at all. "What did the Nawal tell you about the allies?" I asked. My question seemed to catch her off guard. She did not know how to answer. "I can't think," she finally said. It was as though she had never experienced that state before. She paced back and forth in front of me. Tiny beads of perspiration had formed on the tip of her nose and on her upper lip. She suddenly grabbed me by the hand and practically pulled me out of the house. She led me to a nearby ravine, and there she got sick. My stomach felt queasy. She said that the pull of the allies had been too great and that I should force myself to throw up. I stared at her, waiting for further explanation. She took my head in her hands and stuck her finger down my throat with the certainty of a nurse dealing with a child, and actually made me vomit. She explained that human beings had a very delicate glow around the stomach, and that that glow was always being pulled by everything around. At times, when the pull was too great, as in the case of contact with the allies, or even in the case of contact with strong people, the glow would become agitated, change color, or even fade altogether. In such instances, the only thing to do was to simply throw up. I felt better, but not quite myself. I had a sense of tiredness, of heaviness around my eyes. We walked back to the house. As we reached the door, Lagorda sniffed the air like a dog and said that she knew which of the allies were mine. Her statement, which ordinarily would have no other significance than the one she alluded to, or the one I myself read into it, had the special quality of a cathartic device. It made me explode into thoughts. All at once, my usual intellectual deliberations came into being. I felt myself leaping in the air as if thoughts had an energy of their own.